thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Scene. Finally, we're back live in the studio. I am Wally, waiting on my homie Will T to bless us to the studio. But right now, I'm doing the show solo. I had a swell weekend, actually. I want to elaborate on my weekend. If you didn't know, I'm part of this entity called This Date Is Over, and it's a entity that promotes, you know, blogs such as Bad Dating Experiences, and also we have events. We have a radio show also that airs every Wednesday on The Flow. And you can also hear us by using the TuneIn app. Great show. The show is hosted by Miss Marie. So make sure you tune in and check out her radio show. But had an awesome time. We had an event at the 201 Bar in D.C. Pretty much a day. It was a day party. We called it a holiday party. And it was a great show out. A great showing. A bunch of my friends came out. Pretty much appreciated. People who tune into the Urban Sports Scene. I want to get a shout out to my homie Fish. My homies Fish, Jew, Brian, all y'all, man. Really appreciate the support. But again, we're here talking about the Urban Sports Scene. Right now, there's a lot going on in sports. We're going to talk about Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather. A lot of talk. A lot of beef within social media. We're waiting on Will T. He's our boxing expert. So when he gets in, we'll talk about boxing. But right now, we're going to our pregame, and we're going to start with some Baltimore Orioles talk. A couple weeks ago, well, actually, was it a week ago? Not sure. But Nelson Cruz signed with the Seattle Mariners with a 4-year deal. And also the Orioles lost Nick Markakis, a guy who started in the farm system and started up with his ball club, lost him to the Atlanta Braves. And he also signed a 4-year deal. Both of these losses are big. I expected, truth be told, I truly expected Nick Markakis to walk. Nelson Cruz, I thought we would try to sign him. I thought we would sign Nelson Cruz. It hurts to lose both. Honestly, it does hurt to lose Nick Markakis. You heard reports that it was a done deal for him to be a Oriole. But again, obviously a lot of Oriole fans will state that Nick Markakis was on the downward of his pro baseball career. I was always a fan of him. I thought within this Orioles lineup, he was the steady rock in the lineup, a guy who was more of a professional hitter. We have a lot of free swingers who play for the Baltimore Orioles, but Nick Markakis is one of the guys in that lineup that would see pitches, would take walks, go the opposite way, have key hits, and he would actually set the tone for people like Adam Jones and Nelson Cruz, who's gone, Matt Wieters, Chris Davis. So I'm interested to see what the Orioles are going to do to replace that position. Rumor has it they're interested in Justin Upton and Matt Kemp. Both are impactful players in terms of guys who can drive in over 100 RBIs, hit over 30 home runs. To me, Matt Kemp hits for a better average than Justin Upton, but Justin Upton is a dynamic player as well. Between the two, if I had to choose, obviously a lot of people would probably choose Justin Upton because he's younger. I would choose Matt Kemp because Matt Kemp to me is a better hitter, more of a professional hitter, a guy who when he's going good and no distractions within, you know, chicks like Rihanna and folks out there in L.A. and Baltimore, it wouldn't be that kind of distraction. But he's a guy that, in my opinion, can hit for a high average and also homers and RBIs. He's a dominating force when he's going good. And he's an MVP candidate. Don't forget, Braun beat him out for the MVP, and that's the year that Braun cheated, supposedly, to cheat and took steroids. So, Matt Kemp is a guy who is an impact player. I would love to have him, but do I think that the Orioles would sign him, get him in a trade? I don't think so. That's just not how this organization works. If they could do it, that'd be great. I would feel good about, you know, losing Nick Markakis, but the Orioles usually go for a player on the cheap. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Orioles are going to do. There's reports also that Orioles VP Dan Duquette, GM, basically quasi-GM, Dan Duquette wants to leave Baltimore and head to Toronto, to the Toronto Blue Jays, to be the CEO. It would make a lot of sense to me because I felt like, obviously, losing Nick Markakis is a loss that we shouldn't have had. And for Dan Duquette not to sign Nick Markakis and give him a deal, that I felt like, you know, because Nick Markakis is a guy. He's an Oriole. He's a guy who started in the farm system, and we saw him grow within the Orioles organization. For them not to sign Nick Markakis, who's not, let's be real, who's not like a Nelson Cruz, who's not a guy who's going to hit 40 home runs. He's a guy that you would think it was reasonably easy to sign. Easy to sign. So that kind of surprised me. So in a way, I kind of think of, when I'm thinking of Dan Duquette, I'm thinking, was he really not putting his whole heart into signing some of these players or re-signing some of these players like a Nelson Cruz or Nick Markakis? And you hear reports that he wants to go, you know, to Toronto. It's like, okay, well, were you really putting your best foot forward to sign some of these guys and be part of this organization? He's done a great job with the Baltimore Orioles. If he did leave, it would hurt. But then again, it makes you think, did he really put his soul into trying to build this team continue the momentum this team had after last season, getting to the ALCS. He states that he wants to be a Baltimore Oriole. He is a Baltimore Oriole. He states that this is where he wants to be. So we'll see. Only time will tell. Down to pregame, college football playoffs. Let me start with the college football playoffs. Let me start first off before I get into college football playoffs. Let me talk about my university, the University of Michigan. They fired Brady Holt. I actually was a fan of Brady Holt. I guess I'm the minority in the whole situation of Wolverine fans. A lot of fans wanted Brady Holt gone. I thought Brady Holt was okay. He didn't get an opportunity. He didn't recruit a big power. I call it a big power wide receiver. Somebody like a Braylon Edwards or David Terrell. Usually Michigan always has that one wide receiver that dominates a game. We relied a lot on Funches, a tight end, to be like the impact player. And if you know Michigan football, that's just not how it goes. So, in terms of certain recruits, I thought Brady Holt missed out on a couple, but then again, I like the job he did his first year. I thought if you give him a couple more years, I feel like Brady Holt would get Michigan back to being a national champion contender. But since Brady's gone, obviously, you know, the next person I'm thinking about is Jim Harbaugh. If you listen to the show often, you know that I'm a big Jim Harbaugh fan. I would love for him to come to Michigan. Michigan is a place where he played his college ball at. He's a prideful Michigan man. So I would love to have Jim Harbaugh. You saw what he did at Stanford. You see what he's done with the San Francisco 49ers, who, in my opinion, do not appreciate the greatness of Jim Harbaugh. And it amazes me that, you know, you hear speculation that Jim Harbaugh could be fired or traded to the Oakland Raiders or whatever. So if the Niners do not want Jim Harbaugh, the Michigan Wolverines, I'm sure they're ready for him. But if they couldn't get a Jim Harbaugh, Les Miles is always out there. He's a guy who loves the university, who loves Michigan. I would love to see him also in the maize and blue. But let's get into what everybody wants to talk about. Everybody wants to talk about the college playoffs, the Final Four. You have Alabama, the overall one seed, Oregon, the two seed, FSU, the three seed, and Ohio State. And that's where the controversy begins, with the Ohio State Buckeyes. With the fourth seed beating out TCU and Ohio State, excuse me, Baylor. It's interesting to me, because I've been thinking about this, why Ohio State beat Baylor and TCU. In my opinion, they beat out those two teams because the committee was already going to get bad press. I felt like the committee wanted to put TCU over Baylor. They were going to get bad press for doing that. So with Ohio State dominating Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game, it made it easy for the committee to look at it like, okay, well, Ohio State's the Big Ten winner. It's going to be hard to choose between it. If we pick TCU, which we want to do, pick TCU over Baylor, then people are going to argue the head-to-head matchup and the co-champion, the whole co-champion argument. So know what? Let's just put Ohio State over TCU and Baylor, even though, in my opinion, the Big 12 is more impactful than the Big 10 at this point in time. So I would have went with TCU. I have no problem. The whole head-to-head thing, to me, if the head-to-head thing counts to me in college football if each opposition, each opponent got the opportunity to play at their home field. TCU played Baylor in Baylor, and that's a hard place to play, and they only lost by 3, and they were up by, I believe, 21 points. And they lost by 3. Now they blew the game, but they only lost by 3 in Baylor. Now, could you say they played that game at TCU's home field? Could you say that, okay, well, could Baylor beat a TCU team? I don't think so. You know, it's easy to say, you know, hear the argument, well, head to head. Well, TCU didn't get the opportunity to play Baylor at TCU. They played them at Baylor, and they still almost won the game. And we've seen what Baylor has done to most opponents at Baylor. They've blown teams out. So that argument, in my opinion, kind of runs a certain way. Baylor is a good team, but I still, if you look at TCU's resume, TCU has a bunch of big wins, and they've dominated most of their opponents. Baylor has a couple games where, when you scratch your head and say, "Oh, wow, you made that game kind of close." So, anyway, in my opinion, the committee, instead of picking TCU, what I believe they really wanted to do, they didn't want the drama. They said, "Okay, this is easy. Give me Ohio State as the fourth spot, because they blew up Wisconsin." Big Ten winners, and then now there's no drama, true drama, within the argument of who do we pick between TCU and Baylor. A lot of people would probably say to themselves, like, okay, well, Ohio State did look good. They lost Braxton Miller. They lost, I keep forgetting the kid's name, the other quarterback, and now they're playing with a third-string quarterback, and they blew out a good Wisconsin team, or quote-unquote a good big Wisconsin team in the Big Ten, which, again, the Big Ten is not that strong. Florida State. Now, that's an interesting thing. Florida State is undefeated. They're the 3 seed. Let me say it again. They're undefeated, and they're the 3 seed. The defending national champions are the 3 seed in the college football playoffs. 3 seed. So that means Florida State will be playing Oregon in the semis. This is defending champions. They're not getting any credit. They beat a good Georgia Tech team on a neutral field to win the ACC. Obviously, Oregon's getting a lot of, you know, get a lot of pub, you know, high octane offense. But we've seen this thing before. Oregon in the big game in this type of moment is a team, in my opinion, is going to choke. Oregon's going to play Florida State, and Florida State brings their A game defensively. You know, plays Oregon physical. I can see Florida State and Bama in a national championship, and that's a game I think everybody wants to see. You know, because I think Bama is going to destroy Ohio State. You know, in a situation, you get Nick Saban to study for pretty much a green quarterback. It's an ideal situation for Bama to get back to the national championship game and play a team like Florida State, which I think that's the game everybody wants to see. Everybody wants to see Florida State versus Bama. My man Will T's in the studio. What's going on, man?
How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We talked
started right without me.
Yeah, of course. Guys,
okay.
Right. 7:30 no show. Got 7:30. Got start on dot.
No problem.
Pregame. Right now, I waited. I skipped the Mayweather Pacquiao part. We'll get back to it since I waited for you for that one.
I appreciate that.
No problem. Right now, we're on to Bama. We're talking about the top four in the college football playoffs.
Yeah. A lot of people are upset because TCU fell out, even though they beat their team by 52 points. But I think you do have to take into consideration who they were playing, Iowa State. And the selection committee has made it clear that for some reason they judge on a week-to-week basis, which I think is stupid. Because you have to take in consideration their previous, you know, their record, the previous games they played, the strength of those previous games. Mm-hmm. And to say you just judge it on a week-to-week basis for mm-hmm. the last, what, four to six weeks?
Yeah.
Makes no sense to me, but I do think ultimately they got the four teams that I think everyone really wanted to see, which is Alabama, Oregon. How Oregon's number two over Florida State is beyond me. But
yeah, I was just talking about that. Florida State to me is the most disrespected team.
The most disrespected undefeated team ever in the FBS.
Ever.
There's no way Florida State shouldn't be number one.
We're talking about the defending champions.
That hasn't lost a game in 29 games mm-hmm. since 2012. But if you were asking me, if my top four would go, it would go Florida State, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State.
I would go, I guess you can call it SEC bias. I would go Bama, Florida State, Oregon, Ohio State. But to be told, I wouldn't have Ohio State. I would have TCU over Ohio State.
You make a very valid point, but I think there are two things that kind of takes away from TCU being in the top four. A, that division doesn't have a championship, right? Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have a conference championship game.
B, they lost to Baylor, if I'm not mistaken.
They lost
to Baylor. And then C, you know, the criteria of the selection committee going week to week, you know, even though they thrashed Iowa State like they were supposed to, but then you counter that with Ohio State down to their third string quarterback
thrashing
Wisconsin when they were technically an underdog in that game.
The only thing I would say about, you know, the head to head to me is like a funny, especially when the same division, the same conference. Well, what's going to call it the same division? TCU went to Baylor, though they did blow the lead. They had a 21-point lead and lost by three. They went to Baylor, which that's not an easy place to play at. When you play at Baylor, usually teams get blown out.
Yeah, that's the house that Robert Griffin III built.
That's the house that Bob built. All right, so my thing is like, all right, if Baylor went to the home of TCU, I believe TCU would have won that game. So it's like head to head can go, but so far, you know what I mean? Especially if you're in the same division. Now in the NFL and other out of conference, it makes more sense. Out of conference is something like in basketball, college basketball. There you play your opponent about twice a year. Like in the Big East, you play them twice a year. So you can gauge it. Okay, well, it's a split, you're even, or if you take two, you're the better team. Because you play, you know, because a home advantage is real. You can't deny. Home advantage is helpful. So, like, the head-to-head they can go, but so far now, if Baylor had blew out TCU, then you could be like, all right, well, they dominated them. And then you could really argue about it. Though you could still raise the same argument, but it's a domination. I mean, they got dominated. Truth be told, TCU blew the game on the road at their home, at Baylor's home.
Well, I think ultimately you have a very valid point, but I think ultimately this creates the discussion for ultimately what ESPN wants and what the university presidents and chancellors may not want, which is expansion to eight teams. Because you know this will be heavily debated next year around this time.
No, you are. Continue.
This will be heavily debated next year around this time and with proper merit. But I'm excited come, you know, New Year's Day, January 1st, to see those four teams. You know, I think those are four powerhouse programs at this point. This year, there'll be a lot of debate over if they're the four best, but I think they're four powerhouse, four true powers. And it's going to be interesting. You know, I think that they kind of screwed Florida State, making Florida State having to travel all the way to the Northwest to face Oregon. But I think Florida State has just enough defense and Jameis Winston to make just enough plays down in the fourth quarter for them to pull it off, and we get to see the championship game that everyone wants to see, Alabama-Florida State.
All Jameis Winston does is win. Hate him if you want to. All he does is win. And also, and to your point, I think the four it's not that much controversy in my opinion. You got four teams. It's not like March Madness. You're missing out on a team, and you're like, oh wow, that team definitely should have been, and they got screwed. This one is like you know, because this is my theory. I feel like the committee, because how they ranked TCU initially, I think the committee really wanted to put TCU in the tournament. I mean, in the top four, but Ohio State did them a big favor by blowing out Wisconsin, and it was like I think they believe. If say it was Ohio State blew out Wisconsin, Ohio State blew out Wisconsin, right?
Okay.
All right. Say that Baylor wasn't even in the discussion. Baylor was not in the discussion.
Okay.
TCU would in my opinion, I think TCU would have got in over Ohio State, even one loss, in that one loss, because I feel like the split between Baylor and TCU, the committee didn't want that drama. Ohio State, blow them out was easy.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Ohio State definitely did the committee a huge favor. They made it easy for them to pick, being that they're down to their third quarterback. Had a shutout against Wisconsin, and also they were underdog coming into that game. So you're definitely right. I definitely agree with you on that. They did them a huge favor.
So who's the favorites to win it all?
I'm still going with the champion. Till you knock off the champion, Florida State. Famous Jameis will make enough plays for them to win, and then he should exit NFL.
That's a given. Crab's waiting for him. Crab legs are waiting for him.
Yeah, but you know what's going to be interesting? And I'm sorry to kind of go on
no,
off
no,
about
no,
this.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Go ahead.
It's going to be interesting to see Mariota versus Jameson, because those are the two top quarterbacks that
went in the draft.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's going to go in the draft. And you're going to have the debate, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have the debate with Mariota, who, you know, the league has – everyone wanted that dual-threat quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the dual-threat quarterbacks, the Kaepernicks, the RG3s, the Cam Bobs. Newtons, the Russell Wilson, they aren't faring that well, right? Except for Russell Wilson. And, you know – Cam Newton's regressed, but, you know, he's shown that he can make enough plays from the pocket.
And to be honest with you, Cam Newton's a little different. He's not like them to me. He's like even more of a pocket passer compared to those. But you're right, though. Yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying, though. Yeah. You're right, though. You're right. You're totally right, though.
And then you have Jameis Winston, you know, the guy who has all of the noise around him. But he's more of a prototypical NFL quarterback. So it's going to be interesting to see how that game plays out and how it affects, you know, GM's thinking around April and May of who they're going to select at the top of the draft, especially if your team's up there.
Yeah, we're not going to choose a quarterback. But I will say this, within you're referring to the draft, Jameis Winston is the more sure thing compared to Mariota, in my opinion.
I totally agree, but you definitely. I mean, you might find some GMs and coaches.
Don't get twisted, though. If Chip Kelly gets his hand on Mariota, it's a problem.
Well, you never know. Chip Kelly's one of those guys that's kind of left field, so he may decide. Look, I've taken this team to two conference championships in 2 years with guys who aren't franchise quarterbacks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, got you. Mm-hmm.
You
mean division?
Yeah,
you mean
excuse me, division. Mm-hmm. Let's put all our chips on the table. Let's go get my guy.
Yeah, that's his favorite.
To run my offense, and he'll take us over the top. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
That's according.
You heard
to
it folks, here first. If it happens, you heard it here first.
According to my brother, who follows Pac-10 football, said Mariota, that's like his favorite quarterback of all time. That's his favorite quarterback. So I wouldn't be surprised. If he wants him, I mean, I don't think he's in love with Nick Foles, and he's not he likes Mark Sanchez, but he's not in love with him either. Excuse me. Let's go to boxing. Manny Pacquiao, Manny Pacquiao called out Floyd Mayweather. Also, you know, he destroyed
Chris Algieri.
Chris Algieri. Do you feel right now Manny Pacquiao is hot right now? He's putting it out that he's ready to fight Floyd. He wants to fight Floyd. And Floyd declines it. If he does decline it, do you feel like Floyd is ducking Manny if he declines it?
If I don't, for the simple reason that there's a feud between Floyd Mayweather and Bob Arum, who's the promoter of Manny Pacquiao. From my understanding, that hatred that Floyd, and I don't like to use the word hatred, but from my understanding, it's a strong, deep-rooted hatred towards Bob Arum over money. And that's going to be a huge roadblock for making this fight. Also, you couple that with Al Haymon, who is Floyd Mayweather's manager. Him and Bob Arum haven't done a lot of business, and there's talks that there's tension there. So you add those two dynamics. Then you also add the dynamic of let's be real. Manny Pacquiao is going to want 50-50, probably will settle for 60-40.
Yeah.
But the reality is he's not going to get that. He may get 75-25 with the high percentage, or he'll get a percentage of the back end.
75-25. Wow.
Just because Floyd Mayweather's going to hear me, I was going to make this argument.
Mm-hmm.
Look at your last fight with Chris Algieri. What's the pay-per-view numbers? Mm-hmm. Pay-per-view numbers were reported at anywhere from 275 to 350. Floyd Mayweather, since he's been on that run after, you know, since fighting exclusively on
Showtime,
not Showtime, but pay-per-view primarily after the Oscar De La Hoya fight, has been anywhere between 750 on the low end to 200 to almost 2 million pay-per-view buys. So he's going to make the argument that I am the A side, and being that I am the A side, and routinely fighters who fight me get 90-10 or at the most maybe 80-20. He's going to say you may get 75-25 and you won't get any percentage of the pay-per-view or the gate, which isn't going to happen. So if this fight happens, Manny Pacquiao, if he says he wants to fight Floyd Mayweather, he's going to have to prove it. He's going to have to take less at the bargaining table. But here's the thing, though, and this is how Manny Pacquiao gets his money back. If he loses, if Floyd Mayweather were to lose to Manny Pacquiao, or it's a highly contested fight, the rematch is where you get all of that money, because the rematch will be the match that will be even bigger than the first fight. If it's competitive, if it's a blockbuster like we all, if we think it's a pop culture event like we all think it will be. I do think now is the time for this fight to be made. I think Manny Pacquiao is, you know, he's shown that he's recovered from that devastating knockout to Marquez. And, you know, this is a fight that people wanted to see 7 years ago.
I know.
So, you know, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't try to make the fight, but we have to wait until this weekend. And I say that because Amir Khan fights Devin Alexander. And if Amir Khan looks amazing against Devin Alexander, not lessening the executives at CBS and Showtime force pressure on Floyd Mayweather, I doubt probably will happen,
because
Floyd Mayweather has the best manager in boxing, and Al Heyman, he probably has an ironclad contract of who he gets to fight, who he wants to fight. I think we're more likely to see him versus Amir Khan this weekend. But you know, if Canelo also think a wild card is if Canelo fights Cotto and he stays on that Cinco de Mayo weekend, Floyd's going to have to do something to trump him if Floyd still wants to fight Cinco de Mayo weekend. But ultimately, I think that if you asked me to put a percentage on, would the fight happen?
Will it happen? Like when? Will it happen?
No, will it happen next? Will it happen in May?
Okay.
35% chance.
Oh, that's high. That's higher than what it used to be.
35%
chance. That's higher than it used to be.
Well, I mean, it's higher than it used to be. I mean, only people that really can make it is the executives at HBO and the executives at CBS and Showtime. If they get together and come out with a plan, because the blueprint is there. You know, we've had a Showtime and HBO fighter face each other with Mike Tyson versus Lennox Lewis.
Yeah.
So the blueprint is there on how to divide up the cake between both of them. But can the executives exert some type of power over Floyd Mayweather and make him take this fight? That's to be seen, which I doubt.
You really think it'll be at 70? See, I can't see it being 75-25. I don't think
it'll be 70.
I see 60-40.
It's not going to be 60-40 from the standpoint that, A, Floyd Mayweather is going to say, what do you bring? Okay, you bought pay-per-view buys, but guess what? You want to know why you brought those pay-per-view buys? Because you've always had a Latino fighter that you were fighting against.
Okay.
Marquez, the fight numbers with him and Timothy Bradley weren't that great.
No one wants to see Timothy Bradley.
I mean, I think Timothy Bradley is a highly skilled fighter, but doesn't have a personality that a lot of people want to see. Pacquiao Cotto did big numbers, but you had Miguel Cotto, who was the B-side, per se, and he had that Latino demographic. Floyd's going to say, what do you bring? Mm-hmm. When you've had to go out on be the A attraction against a non-Latino fighter, your numbers haven't been up to snuff. I'm the A side. I'm the guy that gets a million plus, at least, you know, 850,000 plus viewers, I want 75%. And he makes that argument. It's not a whole lot Manny Pacquiao can say, because he's come out and he's laid that first trump card. I want that fight. I want this fight next. You really want it? We'll take the lower end then.
See, I don't know. I can see. I just still see 60-40. I don't think Pacquiao's getting 50-50. He can throw that way. He can throw it to the side.
60-40 ain't happening.
What about 65-35?
65-35 ain't happening. 70-30, yeah.
You really think that? Like,
I know this. I know this. 70-30.
But see, Pacquiao brings, or to me, or Mayweather. But who can Mayweather say when he fought other than, like, Mayweather's big draws are Hispanics as well.
He hasn't fought anyone but Hispanics.
It's
but,
the same thing that Pacquiao could say. So it's the same thing then.
But he can always make the argument that, no.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm the most relevant fighter in boxing. I'm the main attraction.
Yeah, I'm saying, but see, Pacquiao could say I'm a big attraction too, though. I mean, he is a big attraction. He's a mega attraction.
He's not the main attraction like Floyd Mayweather.
I'm not arguing that. But he's bringing, because 70, like, who, or for instance, like, who did,
all right, how much think, did think about it like this: when De La Hoya fought Mayweather,
yeah, totally agree.
It was 75-25 De La Hoya.
Of course, but at that time, De La Hoya was he was a thorough attraction.
He was a thorough attraction. I mean, he was a huge box office attraction, but he never did those numbers ever until that Floyd Mayweather fight. We all know that that's kind of the fight where that Floyd Mayweather ascended. And took it to a whole nother level. So he's gonna make the argument, look, I'm the cash cow. I'm the king of boxing. I'm the one who has all the notoriety. You want to fight 75-25. I may give you 70-30 if you're nice.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, that's the economics of it. That's how it's going to go, brother.
All right, we'll see.
We got a lot of time. Hopefully it happens, but
I hope it does happen. I actually think it's going. I'm going to give credit to Canelo and Cotto. I actually think this is going to force the hand. It's because,
Canelo and Cotto hasn't officially been made. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk that they're real close, but
if it does happen on Cinco de Mayo. Like, it does force the hand from Floyd to think bigger if he wants that date. That's the date, because that's Floyd's date.
Yeah, I mean,
he makes that a nice event in Vegas.
Yeah, he does. But a more likely scenario is you see Floyd on Cinco de Mayo, and then you see Cotto, Canelo, Puerto Rican Day Parade, the weekend of the Puerto Rican Day Parade in New York.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good one, too. Actually, it's a remarkable one, too. That's a really good one, too. Real quick, didn't read this off, but back to our college football segment. I want to read off a Facebook comment from one of our folks on our Urban Sports Scene page. My man Jordan said, referring to why was Ohio State picked over Baylor and TCU, he said more prominent school, simple. Or I guess you mean simply. I would have gone with Baylor. Hate Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has their opinion. I'm just excited for New Year's Day to sit in the house and watch both of those games.
Yeah, I want to see. Actually, I'm a fan. I want to see those games, man. I actually want to see that Florida State Oregon game. That's called draft money. That's a draft money game.
Yeah, and I guarantee that Jameis Winston shows up and shows out.
All right, well, it's time for a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the Washington Redskins' pathetic game against this. Showing against the St. Louis Rams. Greg Williams, I'm proud of you, man. Thanks for coming back and beat the Redskins. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. What's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
So, I typed a text to a girl I used to see, saying that I chose this cutie pie with whom I wanna be. And I apologize if this message gets you down. Then I CC'd every girl that I'd CC round town. And hate to see y'all frown, but I'd rather see her smiling. Witness all around me, true, but I'm no island, peninsula maybe. Makes no sense, I know crazy, give up all this that's in my lap, no looking back. Spaceships don't come equipped with rear view mirrors, they dip as quick as they can. The atmosphere is now ripped. I'm so like a pip, I'm glad it's night. So the light from the sun would not burn me on my bum when I shoot the moon. High jump the boom like a preemie out the womb. My partner yelling too soon, don't do it, reconsider, read some litter. Sure on the subject, you sure? You know we got your back like Cairo Pratt. Take if that do you dirty.
We're back from commercial break. Also, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website. The website is www.walio.podbeam.com. Podbeam is spelled podbean.com. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crit Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Stiller Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Stiller Fan. Again, our phone lines are open, so feel free to call in. The number is 202-495-0904.
I do have a caveat if you're going to call in. This isn't your sports therapy session, so please keep it rather brief, and we don't want to hear, you're not sitting on the couch with your feet up explaining to us why the Redskins, Washington has traumatized you.
You said Redskins, you know you wanted to say it.
Yeah, I slip every now and then.
It's okay, man. It's okay.
Why Washington has traumatized you, because the first question I'm going to ask you is, why are you still a fan?
Why am I still a fan?
Yeah.
Still a fan because I'm a diehard Redskins fan. That's why I'm a fan. I love my team. But did I watch the game on Sunday? No, I did not.
What'd you do?
I went to get something to eat. Where else did I go to? I was at Best Buy.
So you didn't listen to the game at all?
I saw it on the Best Buy screen.
Oh, okay.
You know, so, but that's all I did. I didn't really care for
the. I didn't watch the game either. I caught some highlights. You know, of course, I was traveling, so I ended up hearing like the post game report on the local ESPN affiliate.
Mm-hmm. So you watched most of it? I just heard fans calling in.
Depressed and
you heard the post game.
Yeah, post game show.
Oh yeah, I saw the fake field goal. So I saw that. I saw the pass play where I guess was that Bailey who caught it at the 1 yard line or something, almost fumbled. I saw a couple plays.
I saw the highlights, and I also saw that stadium empty.
Yeah, I mean that's what it is now. I mean we've seen this before. Put it that way. We've seen this before. When this team is pathetic like this, 3-10 right now. Or whatever record they would have in prior years, the fans won't come out. I mean, the fans are great. Be honest with you, the fans here are great because this team could be, you know, 3-5, really looking like garbage. But you know, they'll be out here supporting you until they're mathematically out. Then it's like, all right, screw you. I can't stand the product on the field. So the fans here are great. I mean, I feel bad. As a fan and speaking for all Redskins fans, just seeing what we have to endure. it's just annoying. You know what I mean? So keep your heads up, Redskin fans. We'll be fine. Eventually. Oh, damn. Excuse me. We'll be fine. You know, just have the faith. Hopefully the Washington Redskins will get this situated correct.
All right, enough with the pep talk. Let's get into the game and let's do what we came to come here for. Let's do what we came here to do, which is talk about the depressing Washington football team.
So, like, what part?
Let's start about Greg Williams' revenge.
Okay, hold on. I did mention that. You know what I mean, Greg Williams, man. You heard UGK, man. I choose you, man. I love you, man. Real talk, come from the heart. I love Greg Williams, man. So I'm gonna say, you did what you had to do, Greg Williams. What Fisher did for you by taking all the draft picks that came, that the draft picks that resulted from the RG3 trade, was all love for you, Greg Williams. He just showed, you know, he felt that you were done dirty over here in Washington. You should have been the head coach of the Washington Redskins. And
You talking about going out for the open coin toss. Man,
yeah.
That was hilarious.
I mean, it was all for Greg Williams.
Yeah, it was.
It was all for Greg Williams. I mean, let's be real. It was for Greg Williams. And, you know, it was for Greg Williams. Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams are tight. They're super tight. He's a defensive coordinator for Jeff Fisher.
And for you all who don't know, we're referencing, Greg Williams was supposed to be the head coach when Joe Gibbs left.
Yeah.
Greg Williams had a $1 million bonus if he was not to be paid to him if he was not the head coach when Joe Gibbs retired. Ultimately, we know what happened. Joe Gibbs left. Greg Williams was not hired as the head coach. I don't know if he was paid his money. Then also, we all know the trade that went down between St. Louis and Washington, and the 6 draft picks. They sent those guys out as the captains for the coin toss. It kind of a FU to Washington for doing Greg Williams the way they did by not giving him the head coaching job. And also to say the one guy that you sent these 6 draft picks to us for is sitting on the bench. These guys are all active and all participants and contributors to our team. So take that.
Yeah, it was. He stuck it to our face, man. He skeeted all over.
Skeeted?
He skeeted all over Redskins fans.
Oh, wow.
I mean, no, actually, not Redskins fans. He skeeted all over the Daniel Snyder and company. That's how I look at it. Not Redskins fans. Daniel Snyder and company. Saying, look, you know, thank you for these draft picks. Skeet.
Oh, wow.
Boom.
That's what it
is. You can say skeet on radio. You just can't say. You can say skeet.
All right.
You don't remember? Like when it was Lil Jon said, the song.
Yeah, I remember the song.
Yeah, they was on the radio, and they didn't, because folks didn't know what it meant, so it was like on the radio.
I don't have no problem with it, bro.
Yeah, exactly. You know what
I'm
mean?
Just going with the flow of the show, man.
But yeah, basically that's what it was. It was like saying, you know, it was basically giving the FU to Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen, to be honest with you. So, I mean, it is what it is. I'm not mad. I didn't think it was dirty. Or, you know, I was like, all right, well, you taking care of your homie. That's your boy.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
All right. I think there's not a whole lot to discuss as far as the game goes.
No.
They were shut out 24-0. Tavon Austin made a bunch of incredible plays on a special team.
Cole McCoy got hurt.
The fans were
chanting
RG3. He came back and played the last couple of series. He went 3-for-4 with a sack and like 75 yards.
Yeah, nice sack.
Pierre Garçon finally was able to get back on track. But he had like six.
There.
Yeah. He had like six catches for 95 yards,
yeah,
something
yards,
like that. Trent Williams played atrocious.
Yeah.
He's
hurt.
The one shining element of that game was Ryan Kerrigan got his 11th and a half sack of the
sacks
game.
Again.
Without the star pass rusher on the other side that's paid $11.5 million.
Yeah, the Nigerian killer. That's what I'm talking about, man. My man.
Mr. 419 himself, Brian Arakpo.
Brian Arakpo, what's up, homie?
But, all right, I think this game was more intriguing from the standpoint of kind of what happened before the game and during the run-up to the week.
Of course, there you go.
Wednesday night on the crawl for ESPN, they had a quote from Daniel Snyder who said he was confused and befuddled as to the reason why Robert Griffin III had regressed this far and wasn't starting. I think that's the night, yeah, we were all hanging out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we saw that on the crawl. And I told you what I think happened. I think that was the first, that was the flare, that was the warning shot for Jay Gruden. Because probably Daniel Snyder's like, look, we gave up all these draft picks for this guy. When you interviewed with me, you told me, look what I did with Andy Dalton. I made Andy Dalton into a serviceable starting NFL quarterback. You have Robert Griffin III, who's probably the most dynamic thing who's been in this player that's been in this organization in the last 30, 35 years, right? Mm-hmm. Jay Gruden sold Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen on, I can make this guy into the complete quarterback, the drop back quarterback. I can turn this guy, you know, look what I did for Andy Dalton. I'll take this guy to a whole nother level, and I'll put this franchise back where it used to be during the glory days. So Daniel Snyder's probably thinking to himself, you know, I don't want to put my hands in it, so I'm going to let Jay Gruden do what he wants to do, right? Then we'll talk after the season. But he's still befuddled, like, how did he regress this far? He's healthy. He had a whole off season to come in and learn your system. You're supposed to be a quarterback coach, offensive genius or offensive mastermind. Why are we at this point? Why is Colt McCoy, a guy who we brought off the street, who no one really wanted and was our third string quarterback, the starting quarterback for us at this time, just like Robert Griffin wasn't the starting quarterback for us at this time last year?
I didn't look at it like in terms of him questioning he's going to keep Jay Gruden or not.
I didn't say question of keeping him. I think that's the first warning shot in the air that says you're not on the hot seat, but we're definitely going to have an in-depth talk at the end of the season.
I'll say this much. I know it's because Daniel Snyder is such a RG3 fan. Like, it's the truth. He is. It is what it is. He's a big fan of RG3. RG3 let Daniel Snyder down. All right. Daniel Snyder, you're right, though. I think Daniel Snyder is he's looking at it like, you promised me that you can make this dude better. You promised me. But at the end of the day, how I look at it, that may be a shot fired by Daniel Snyder. Daniel Snyder, if that's the case, he needs to look at RG3, not Jay Gruden. Look at RG3 and say, you know what? I can teach somebody but so much. I can try to teach him and make him. And try to make him as good as, like, say, I did with Andy Dalton. But the difference between Andy Dalton and RG3 is that Andy Dalton was willing to learn and RG3 was not.
All right. So then here's the counter argument. I got rid of a guy and his son who created a system that played to his strengths, right? That put the ball in his hand, gave him one or two reads, check down, or if that's not there, run. You supposed to being such an offensive mastermind, why haven't you devised the type of scheme or offense that plays to this guy's strengths?
Has done it. He's incorporated read option. This guy's not stone cold committed to running the read option.
Why aren't you calling, if it's just a part of your offense, why aren't you calling more? Because to me, it looks like when you're calling it.
The thing is, as a play caller, if you're going to run anything, you want to make sure, like, for instance, that's the offense, that person has to run. To implement more, he has to run it effectively. He doesn't even run that effectively anymore. Even when he's not even trying to show a threat, because if you run the read option, you still have to show a threat that you're willing to run and run aggressively. This individual is not showing to run; he's not trying to run aggressively. So if you're not going to pose that running threat, the read option doesn't work. All right, it doesn't work. We watch RG3 when he's running; it's half-assed. I'm sorry, it is what it is. He's half-assed when he's running the read option. So, truth be told, it's really on the player. And I was a pro RG3 dude. I said, Black Jesus, we talked about it last week. This is the truth. And I see it. It's something that the camera doesn't lie. TV doesn't lie. We watching it. It's like, dude, you're not hustling. You're not trying to take that one step and go gear. Because you know what? Everybody will say to me, like, Wally, it's because he's injured. But then you see him when he plants and goes, like, I guess in that Minnesota game, he planted and went. And I was like, oh, he still does have his speed. So he chooses when to run. So my thing is, if he wants to run the read option, he has to be committed. If even if it's partial, if it's part of the playbook, he has to be committed for Jay Gruden to want to implement more. If he's not committed, then what do you do? Because he's not running that right either.
Okay, so that was the first event on the timeline. Then I believe that Jay Gruden came out and said that Colt McCoy is going to be our guy for the rest of the year. Robert should work hard, you know, contribute to the team on scout team and also be active in the meeting room. And then that was countered by a Jason Reed quote, which Jason Reed said that.
Jason Reed's from what?
Washington Post.
There you go. Cool. Just making sure.
That there's a strong possibility that Robert Griffin III plays again as the starting quarterback before the year ends.
No, Jason Reed didn't say that. What's his name said that?
Who?
Schefter said that.
Adam Schefter.
Adam Schefter said. Jason Reed said that. What's his name's done with him?
Excuse me. I don't want to misquote him. Jason Reed said that Jay Gruden has essentially said he's done with Robert Griffin III. He thinks that he's too worried about his brand and the off field shenanigans and doesn't want to put in the time and the commitment to be an elite quarterback.
And then Adam Schefter had a different report stating that he believes that RG3 is going to start again this season.
So that was Friday, Saturday.
Conflicting reports.
Yeah, conflicting reports. Then Sunday morning before the game starts, London Fletcher Baker, the guy who everyone thought was this great leader for Washington's organization, this pillar in the community, the pillar of the team, the backbone, he came out on CBS Sports and dropped a bomb right before the game. He essentially said that Mike Shanahan knew that Jim Haslett was lost and didn't know what he was doing, which I think is kind of conflicting since Mike Shanahan gave him an extension after his first year there. But nevertheless, he said that, Jim Haslett was lost, didn't know what he was doing. And then he later went on Twitter
had a spat with his son.
With Jim Haslett's son. You know, Jim Haslett's son stated that, that's really distasteful and disrespectful. You know, my father really looked up to you, and, you know, for you to come out with those, to say that, you know, without even speaking to him first and blasting him in the media is wrong. And then London Fletcher Baker retorted, your father's ruined a lot of people's careers, a lot of players' careers. This is really left field. No one really expected that from the character, from what we got a sense of the character of London Fletcher Baker as a leader for this team. Were you shocked?
I was very shocked. What I didn't like about it was that London Fletcher for the last couple of years has been a bum. And Jim Haslett has consistently put him in the lineup. So for you to go out there and say that, you know, and I'm not a big Jim Haslett fan anymore either, but what he's doing on defense. But it's weird where a guy plays you and he stands up for you. When everybody's saying London Fletcher lost a step, should you think about benching London Fletcher? He came out and said, no, London does so much for this team that we need to have him on the field. And then you come out and say this, like, dude, did you see yourself play the last 2 years? Like, did you see yourself get hoard by tight ends? Did you see yourself miss tackles?
He did say that sometimes he had to even change the defensive play calls that came in from the sidelines.
Yeah, sidelines because he was like, they won't
work. No, we're not running that. That's not going to work.
That's dumb. That's what he said. That's dumb. That won't work. That's dumb. Like, again, like if I was a baller before I left, like say it was Ray Lewis. Let's be real. Say it's Ray Lewis. I would have clout. I could say that.
Well, let's say this. I will say this. If you look at London Fletcher's statistics, there is a strong case for him to potentially wear a gold jacket.
No, I'm not knocking that. I'm not saying that. But it's a difference, though. When Ray Lewis is a leader of men, all right? Ray Lewis willed his team to the Super Bowl his last season. He willed his team to the Super Bowl.
We can debate that.
Yeah, but it is what it is. He's a leader of men. Well, they got on the hot streak.
You'll never hear me deny that Ray Lewis was a leader of men while he was in that locker room.
Okay, all right. So, but Ray Lewis, even truth be told, his skills were diminishing. That's the truth. They were. But He still played the middle linebacker, inside linebacker position at 3-4 effectively, period. When he left out the game, he was still effective. London Fletcher, I'm going to say this again, his last two seasons was not a starter, was more, in my opinion, of a special teamer playing as a starting inside linebacker. That's what London Fletcher was, to me, his last two seasons in D.C.
You're not going to get any argument here.
So, so for you to come out and say this about Hazlitt during the last couple of seasons, it's funny to me. Like, it is. It's funny because the year that Hazlitt, we went to the postseason, his defense had folks being hurt.
Was it ranked number 11th overall?
And they played well. Like, they've got turnovers. They played well. So we're going to go off the last two seasons where you sucked. All right, let's be real. Where you sucked, your Hazlitt's not. I'm not taking Hazlitt out of the equation because he sucked as a defensive coordinator. But I'd rather have, say, like if Ryan Kerrigan came out and said, like, oh, man, this dude's the worst. I'll be like, yeah, you got it. Because you ball. Like, you ball. Dude, for the two seasons that you're referring to, you were part of the issue. You were a bum. I can't have a bum call me a bum. It's stupid.
I get it. I totally get it. London Fletcher isn't absolved of any fault when it comes to the performance of the defense over the past 2 years. He articulated his opinion. I don't think it was the proper format or time, but I know why he did it, because he's trying to get on TV. He's trying to break into TV.
He's phony.
And he wants to make that big
splash.
That splash, yeah. To get noticed, and you know, from here on out, maybe, you know, CBS Sports puts him on a little bit more. But you know, to throw your old defensive coordinator under the bus who stood up for you when your play here was, you know, that's kind of telling of you, as your personality as a person and your character.
Supposed to be like, you look at,
but he was supposed to be a pillar of this team.
Yeah, he's a man.
The leader.
And I mean, not to say like this is supposed to, this means anything. He's supposed to be like a man of God.
Supposed to be, but you know,
that's something else.
Let me I'll hold my tongue. I'm not going to say anything about that.
But you know what I mean? Like, for the stigma that's supposed to put out, supposed to be portrayed as that type of individual. It's just interesting.
It was interesting.
It's interesting, man. It's just because he went out of his way to bash that dude.
He did.
That's my thing. It wasn't. You could say Hazlitt, you know, right now he's not effective right now. Whatever he's doing is not effective. That sounds better than saying like, well, you know, I had to change the plays.
And
to be honest with you, which is like the dumbest thing in the world about him even stating that, like, I'm sure Ray Lewis changed plays with Marvin Lewis back in, like, he changed a couple plays. You know why? Because he's a middle linebacker and they're the quarterbacks. So they can change it. They can change defensive plays. You can do that. But it's just like, for him to go the next level and be like, dude, it's like, that ain't going to work. That's dumb. Like,
yeah, well, you know what I mean? I think it's more telling than anything that London Fletcher didn't think about that statement. Here's why. Okay, if you're saying you changed the plays, let's look at the results of the plays and look at the results of the defense. That lets me know that you weren't that knowledgeable or wasn't that plugged into the game plan.
That's true.
So, I mean, you kind of did yourself a disservice, London Fletcher. So clearly I can tell that you didn't think this thing through before you made that statement. You reacted impulsively. I'm not going to give you a pass because I feel as if I have to, before I'm going to put it out in the open, I'm going to come to you and you're going to know it.
Exactly.
But, you know, bad judgment by him. We'll see how that plays out. But I don't think amongst anyone in this area, and particularly the fan base, feels sorry for Jim Hazlitt. Everyone feels that he has to go after this season. Whether that happens, I think most likely it'll happen. He'll be the scapegoat for what happened to this season, you know. But he's just the top of a long laundry list of things that didn't work out well for Washington football team this season.
All right, let's go to something that did happen in the game. I mentioned earlier Colt McCoy was hurt against the St. Louis Rams. If he doesn't play Sunday against the Giants, who would you want to see? Kirk Cousins or Bob?
I think at this point you have to go with Bob because for the simple fact that Bob will be in the last year of this contract next year, you probably aren't going to pick up that option because you have to pay him like something crazy, like $13 million for that fifth year. So you want to see him build momentum going into the offseason, right? You want to see him progress from where he was at the beginning, the middle of the season, show some progression so you could ultimately have a glimmer of hope going into the offseason and know, okay, maybe I feel confident with this guy possibly competing for the starting quarterback position.
Pose the same question on our Facebook page. You got some funny responses. my man Chris Vincent said, Cole Brennan. My man Adam Fairley said, Rex Grossman.
Wow.
And my man Ronan, I hope I said it correctly. McVoy, yeah, I said McVoy, said Pat White.
Jesus, man, you guys are harsh out here, man. Just to think, 2 years ago, he was in the middle of the most special run that happened in the city for that franchise in the past 20 years, man.
It felt like it was just a week ago.
Yeah, man.
No, damn. I would rather see, I would like to see RG3. I really want the kid to be successful. I mean, I know I've bad-mouthed him for the last couple of weeks because he's pissed me off, but I would like to see him be successful. You know, you hear reports that after practice, you know, he's been isolated. You know, he doesn't even enter. He doesn't go back to the locker room. He's busy kicking punts while people in the locker room getting ready or you know.
I mean, probably doesn't want to talk to the reporters.
Maybe not. Or maybe he won't be around his teammates anymore. Maybe he doesn't feel the love anymore. But I would rather him spend that time, say, kicking it. I mean, punting the ball away. I'd rather have him spend that time perfecting his craft. Maybe, you know, stay in there, throwing passes with the quarterback coach. Or maybe, why about just go ahead, maybe studying some tape? I don't know.
Copious notes on that Monday night against Seattle. He has all the notes he has to see. Because he took the notes of Russell Wilson, who's totally turned his team around.
Obviously, that was a show.
Probably.
Yeah, because I don't know. That was a show. You refer to like the stuff that happened with you. We talked about the TMZ stuff, right?
Where one of his teammates, an anonymous source, went to TMZ and said they don't see the guy in the league more than another couple years. He doesn't work hard in the film room. He's disingenuous. He should be a politician.
Yeah, he's more interested in that type of stuff.
Interested in his branding and his public perception, and he's more like a politician than anything.
Yeah, I don't see how they're going to keep this dude. I really don't.
If true,
I don't see how. But TMZ's always right, though.
TMZ, for the most part, is always right, which is sad.
I know, right?
but I think this guy's too sensitive to want to stay here. I think that his feelings are hurt. His ego is bruised. And unless Daniel Snyder really opens up that checkbook of his, that giant checkbook of his, to really atone for everything, which I don't really see with Bruce Allen as the GM.
No, it's not happening.
I'm not going to say they're going to give up on him, but it's going to be pretty hard to, if he comes back next year and is the starter and totally dazzles everyone, he's going to make everyone pay. He's going to be like, I want to be one of the top six highest paid quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, but who has that faith in the kid right now? I don't see it.
I mean, it would
it'd be a
tremendous comeback story.
It would be. He'd be comeback player of the year. He really would be. I don't see it happening. Unfortunately, RG3 right now, he just has to work. He has to work to be RG3. Right now, he's Bob. You gotta take it one step at a time. See, this is why I'm looking. He's Bob now. If he shows some kind of improvement, he'll be RG.
Okay.
Then after RG, if he improves even more, then he's RG1, the first. All right.
He's so disrespectful, man.
Then, if he does even better, he's RG3, the second.
Okay.
That one last numeral is that means the whole project is complete. He's reborn again. Then maybe, I'm not calling him Black Jesus anymore. I'm calling him something else because I think that's like, he can never be called Black Jesus again.
Okay.
All right. Then he could be RG3. The remade, improved RG3. But right now, he's Bob. We started with Bob.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Get your popcorn ready.
I know, right? Get your popcorn ready. But anyway, the Ravens are 3-10. There's a lot, you know, obviously you mentioned Daniel Snyder, you know, sending out the warning shots. Bop, bop. Could Jake Rube be fired this season?
No, I don't think he will be for a couple reasons. A, Jay Gruden has a 5-year contract that's fully guaranteed. B, Jay Gruden is the brother of probably the most high-profile coach or ex-coach in the league in a long time, John Gruden. So if he were to get rid of Jay Gruden, there would be so much leakage of information of how poorly run this organization has been from the media, primarily through John, you know, I mean, an anonymous source, which most likely would be John Gruden. Then also on the Monday night.
Jay will be the anonymous. Oh, yeah.
John. Monday Night Football, John Gruden will forever take stabs and plugs at this organization. And then, you know, another thing, you can't get rid of him after 1 year because there's already the perception that this owner is meddlesome and isn't patient. And, you know, if you get rid of him now, you know, with this being Bruce Allen's first coaching hire as the GM with total control, that really doesn't bode well for Bruce Allen. And we all know that Bruce Allen definitely has Daniel Snyder's ear and his trust. So I say Jay Gruden stays around another year, and also RG stays around for another year.
I also think Jay Gruden shouldn't be fired. I think Jay Gruden has the potential to be a great coach. I've always stated that. I'm a believer in Jay Gruden. Now, is he perfect? No. Does he make mistakes? Yes. But I like his honesty, and I like that he's here because he really wants to win games. He wants to win with the best players on the field. And to be honest with you, Jay Gruden is what I've always deemed the type of person that could be a great coach, a guy who's a germ, who understands the person who's behind the scenes working their butts off to try to be a player in any profession. And he – go ahead. You want to say something?
You made an excellent point. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly why he's tired with Robert Griffin III.
He's
not entitlement. He's a guy who had to scrap and work. Even though his brother was the head coach in Tampa on his first position in the NFL, he was like the quality assistant coach. He was the lowest of the rung, and he had to work his way up. Whether it was arena football, whether it's him the quarterback at Louisville, he's had to work for everything he's gotten. So that's why he wants a quarterback that's going to work and put in the work to get what he wants.
And that's what I respect him for that. To be honest with you, I totally respect it. I respect him for it. But if he is fired, this is a question that used to be. This question was around when Shanahan was around. Should the Redskins consider bringing in Art Briles?
Nah, it'd really be a full circus, and then we really know who runs this team.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, absolutely. Stay away from Art Briles. Keep Jay Gruden. This will be the first off season where you'll fully have all the elements. Meaning, you know, you have the offense would be in the same system for 2 years. Two off seasons in a row, you have your first round draft pick, you have a surplus of money for free agency, and of course you're going to need a new defense coordinator. But you know, you'll be able to help those young guys, a lot of the younger talent you have, evaluate them and see them progress, and hopefully contribute in 2015.
Posed the same question on our Facebook page. My man Dwight Golson said, "This is a joke. Speaking of Art Briles, bringing a guy whose offense playbook consisted of letting RG3 do whatever he wanted. Art Briles would not win a single game in the NFL. If Gruden is fired, then you will never get a quality coach back here again. Washington is where coaches' careers come to die. Excuse me.
This is where players' careers come to die. Also.
I don't know. DeSean Jackson's career looks pretty good over here. Maybe he's the exception to the rule. My man Lance A. Sessoms said, if Broyles were to come here, we'd know who's pulling strings. Not a good move. Same thing Will said. My man Jordan said,
great man, thanks a lot.
My man Jordan says, you know, about 30 miles north on I-95, there's a major league football team that's highly competitive every year. Baltimore, come over.
Hey.
Hey, you know,
I've been
what?
Saying that's a possibility for a lot of people in this region.
All I'm gonna say is, like, you're not making the postseason. That's gonna be 2 years not making the postseason in a row. It ain't that great.
Okay.
It ain't that great. It's okay, but it ain't that.
They'll great. Be winning seasons.
Yeah, they're for sure. I mean, I would want a winning season. I won't lie to you.
They'll be too. They, I mean, they aren't losing seasons. Last year they were 500, and this year,
last year, this year though.
They might not make the playoffs this year, but they'll have a winning season.
Yeah, that's right. They got a cheater. And we'll talk about that in the next second. But they have a cheater, though. They have a nice cheater.
Okay.
He's missing games because of his cheating skills. Anyway, real quick. I posed this question because I actually thought about this because I saw the St. Louis Rams. And I know that their quarterback is out for the season. And he'll be a free agent next season. Sam Bradford, he'll be a free agent after the season. Should the Redskins make a play for him next year?
Absolutely not. He's often injured. You have a quarterback that's already often injured, and Robert Griffin III. It's just not a good look. Not at all.
Like I think it's an excellent. I think it'd be an excellent signing because he's cheap. You got a comp. You don't have to sign Colt McCoy. Let him go. He's a free agent. Let Colt McCoy go. Have RG3, Kirk Cousins, and Sam Bradford compete for the position. And the better man, and if Colt McCoy, I totally believe that Sam Bradford will win. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. That's fine. But I would look at Sam Bradford like the Arizona Cardinals look at Carson Palmer. I look at Sam Bradford with the weapons of DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Jordan Reed, a guy who won for Jay Gruden system. He gets the ball out quick. Has pocket presence. He's an accurate passer. You know what I mean? The only issue, obviously, is our offensive line. We would have to re-up our offensive line for him. But I have all faith in Sam Bradford to be a good quarterback for the Washington Redskins with the weapons, and because he's never had weapons like you see here in D.C. and St. Louis.
If I'm Sam Bradford, you know where I'm going?
Where are you going?
Tennessee Titans. Ken Whisenhunt has shown that he can resurrect the career of quarterbacks. He knows that he'll be given the opportunity to be kind of the stopgap until the quarterback they draft is ready to go. For those two reasons, and he'll also have some semblance of a weapons in Delanie Walker and Kendall Wright on the outside.
Those weapons ain't better than over here.
I'm not saying they're better over here, but I think for long term, if you think about long term for his career, mm-hmm. I'm going to Tennessee Titans just because I know what Ken Whisenhunt can do for a quarterback and help resurrect his career.
Well, actually, unanimous no, but on Facebook, on the Hail to the Redskins group, my man Thomas White said, with offensive line we have, it doesn't matter who's quarterbacking, they will have to run their lives, and Bradford cannot do that. Jason Goss said, it's hard to believe with the talent this team has to be 3-10 at this point right now in the season is sad. I've been a fan for a long time, and when I watch the games, I see no heart or desire sometimes from this team. I love my team, but you figure at some point something has to give. It's the whole team, not just one person. It's just the whole. It's the whole team.
I mean, it's the culture. It's the culture of the team. I think a better term to use would be the culture of the team.
Yeah, because Ryan Kerrigan busts.
Yeah, butt. Ryan Kerrigan is out there showing off. He should be in the Pro Bowl this year.
He really should. He should. He really should. My man Ronnie Tillman said, no, we have a quarterback. We need a coach who's less concerned with dressing him, RG3 down, and more concerned with building his skill set up. Oh, dang, really? You're an RG3 fan? Oh, Ronnie, you a chick. That's why. No wonder. yeah, RG3 is done right now this season. The coach is doing his job. He's trying to make RG3 tougher. You know what I mean? As a coach, your job is to make someone tougher, trying to make them improve it, to reach their maximum ability. This kid is not trying to.
Some people need to be handled with kid gloves. That's all I can say. Some people may need to be handled with kid gloves.
Explain that.
Well, there are some people that you can constructively criticize, right? Mm-hmm. And they take it in stride and be like, I'm going to improve. I'm going to show you that I'm better than what you think I am. There's some people you have to coddle. So when they're doing bad, that's when you have to be easy on them. But when they're doing good, you could be a little bit more tougher on them. You could push. You could be more demanding of them. So, you know, let's say, what was it, the game at Houston, mm-hmm. that first game? He played decently, right? Mm. So, you know, maybe that was the time where he went into Robert Griffin III and said, all right, you did pretty good. You know, you showed me where I think you showed me a baseline where I think you'll continue to progress. So these are the things we need to work on from here. Right. So let's take the game against Minnesota, right? Which was a terrible game.
No, I was actually a terrible game. Minnesota game was a good game. Well, no.
What game was he?
Tampa.
The Tampa game where he was terrible. Yeah. And then he basically berated him in front of the public. That should have been the time where you should have coddled him. Maybe you coddled him a little bit more. Rebuild his confidence and say, all right, we didn't have the best of games. You did this good. You did this good. But you know, you missed a read here, you missed a read there. You need to really emphasize trying to make those reads, because if you make this read right here, that's seven. That keeps the drive going. And who knows what could happen. Maybe you get down in the red zone, you make a play with your leg. So different people, it's just a management style. Different people need to be managed different ways. You can't manage everyone the same way. Some people you could talk to tough. And they'll get the point, and they'll a sense of pride. They'll be like, I'm going to show you. Some people, you got to coddle. Maybe he's one of those people you got to coddle a little bit.
I post the same question on the Redskins diehard members page. On Facebook, my man Robert Conley said, hell no, he ain't done much in St. Louis either. Speaking of Sam Bradford, man, David Hayes is behind this O-line, and he is injury prone. My man Alan Ray T said, I'm about to pick it outside of Ashburn. It's not even Ashburn no more, homie. they still in Ashburn?
They're still in Ashburn.
Think about the practice facility in Richmond. I'm sorry, you're right. I'm wrong. Apologize. Anyway. But anyway, in terms of Sam Bradford, I would like Sam Bradford to be the start. I'm actually going to protest this. I'm going to promote it. I'm going to put it on Facebook, Twitter, try to bring Sam Bradford to D.C. You probably won't. Some of y'all won't agree with me, but I don't care. I want a quarterback. I want a real quarterback in D.C. A guy that I believe to actually play the position. I don't want to waste a draft pick on a quarterback. I feel like we get a stopgap guy, and if Sam Bradford ends up being like Carson Palmer, productive, good, he's still young enough to reach his potential, I am fine with it. He's going to be on the cheap. You know what I mean? I'm fine with it.
Sam Bradford, if you smart and if your agent's smart, you're not going to take the call from the New York Jets to go there and be their starting quarterback. You're not going to take the call that Wally wants you to take from Washington. You're going to call up Ken Whisenhunt in Tennessee. See if there's some interest. Sign you a 2-year contract.
No, we should go to.
Where?
I would try to hit up Bruce Arians. That's what you really should try to go.
Well, they just signed. Yeah. Yeah.
He blew his knee out. But yeah, I know. But that's what I would go to.
I totally agree. Bruce Arians definitely been a guy who's shown that he can get the most out of the quarterbacks in this system. But since Carson Palmer's there, call up Ken Whisenhunt, go to Tennessee, sign a 2-year contract. And help resurrect your career.
Sam Bradford, listen to me. It's cool. St. Louis, Jeff, we have a good little thing with St. Louis. We gave them draft picks. Come to D.C. We wanted you anyway. If you remember, we wanted Sam Bradford years ago.
Yeah.
So come home.
Okay, whatever. Come home. Sam Bradford is Native American, right?
I know. I was going to say the same thing.
So he's definitely not taking that call.
Real quick before we go to commercial break, Redskins are playing the Giants. What's the motivation? What's the motivation coming to this game for skin fans and Redskins players?
It's in New York, right in the Meadowlands, right?
Yeah.
There is no motivation. You're playing for a draft pick right now. You finally have your draft pick after 2 or 3 years. The motivation should be, let's tank, let's get the best defensive player available, and let's build this thing up and see if Jay Gruden and Robert Griffin III can work together.
I agree. Let's get the best. Let's tank. Let's lose as many games as possible. Let's go 3-13. Let's get a safety. Let's bring a real respectable safety. And we haven't had, unfortunately, the death of Sean Taylor and loss of LaRon Landry. Our safety position has been a joke ever since.
What do you mean? You have ESPN's Ryan Clark back there.
Who's
a proven leader, which he was his leadership.
With the loss of the great late Sean Taylor and LaRon Landry, we haven't had safeties ever since. We have people play the position. We've never had a safety though.
You have ESPN's very own Ryan Clark.
Let me tell you the people we've had over here, man. The jokes. PG County's own Madu Williams. Joke. Ryan Clark, who's living off of Sean Taylor's backside. Everybody's like, oh, can he wear number 21 in practice? If I'm seriously, all real talk. If I'm Clinton Portis, I am driving to Ashburn. and I am tearing that jersey off. If I'm saying no, if I'm Santana, anytime I look at Ron Clark, I'm snatching that jersey off. Like, you should be ashamed to even wear this, to even touch this jersey.
I hear
the way you,
man.
Play. It's pathetic. It's disgusting. It's pathetic and it's repulsive. If I'm on Madden, I would put his number as 99 because he's irrelevant to me. 99 for safety would be irrelevant to me. I'll give Jarvis Jenkins number. You're irrelevant to
you
me.
You had Daugherty.
Daugherty's better than this dude.
You Seriously. Had the world famous Adam Ancelotti.
Adam Archuleta is better than this dude too. At this point in time. But no. Reed Doughty is better. Seriously. Yeah. Reed Doughty, we should re-sign Reed Doughty.
You should.
This dude is horrible. Rambo is better than this dude. Like Ryan Clark is hustling. He is stealing the church's money.
Stealing what did he get? $1.5 million?
I don't care how
I hate
much
to
he
talk gets. About how much somebody gets, but like, I think that was a ring check for when they let him go to Pittsburgh. We still owed you.
Yeah, we just want to get
so
you.
So that's why we want to bring you back. We did you wrong.
Hey, some people need to be gone. Let's scrap that. It happened. It's done, man. Anyway, it's time for commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about some cool NFL stuff to review. Actually, like Johnny Manziel's now the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
Cam Newton got into a car accident.
I know. So. Two fractures in the back.
Yeah.
That sucks. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Man, on the football field, I always had to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
This one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. With my arms are wide, I open my eyes, and now all I wanna see is a sky full of light.
All right, back for commercial break. Again, our phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Like I mentioned before the break, it's time to speak on Johnny Football. Johnny Football will be starting Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals. And we all know who Johnny Football is. That's Johnny Manziel. Right move for the Cleveland Browns?
At this point, I think, yeah. Because it lets you put him into a meaningful game because technically you aren't eliminated from the division or the wild card race, right? Also, Brian Hoyer, let's be real, he struggled. He's been struggling over the last three games. And you need to give your team a spark. So why not put him in now towards the end of the season? Some meaningful games. Let's see what the kid can give you. But also, you're not doing him any favors against Cincinnati. That secondary is pretty tough. Marvin Lewis called him a midget.
I know. You heard that?
Yeah, he called him a midget.
Like, when did Marvin Lewis start being like that,
though? Yeah, when did Marvin Lewis grow a pair of balls?
I know. Like, seriously. I didn't know he had it in him.
Nah, I didn't know he had it in me either.
I know it's a little quiet ninja. Who you know?
Yeah, so this will definitely be one of the more watched games because everyone's kind of in anticipating Johnny Manziel. I'm not going to call him Johnny Football. He was Johnny Football in college. He's Johnny Manziel in the NFL because he hasn't proven anything.
I feel like the Bob thing.
So it's going to be interesting to see. I do think it's the right call for them at this time. I do know that he has an offensive coordinator who can devise a game plan that will simplify his reads and play to his strengths, roll him out of the pocket, make one or two reads, and then maybe a check down, and then tell him, go. So I want to see this game.
Yeah, I'm interested to see this game too. I think it's the right decision. Hoyer was struggling mightily. So it's a good move. Kyle Shanahan, we saw what he did with RG3. He's going to probably open it up. He's got Gordon. So he has weapons. Benjamin Gordon. They have a running game. They have a three-headed monster or a two-headed monster with
Isaiah Cromwell and Terrence West.
Kid from Towson. So This team does have – they have weapons. They have things. They have players, and they have playmakers, and they have the tight end Cameron. So they have playmakers all around the field. And with the speed of the speed threat that Manziel presents as a mobile quarterback, this team – it's a good move. It's a good move. Hoyer was turning the ball over too much, and he wasn't accurate. So, I mean, you're better off playing a rookie because the rookie will do the same thing too. So
yeah,
go ahead.
I totally agree with you. You made a very great point. The rookie's going to do the same thing, but at the same time, it's progression and growth for you to see if you really made the right investment.
So how do you think he'll perform against the Bengals?
Mediocre at best. I think he's going to make a play or two that's going to dazzle everybody, right? Whether it's him rolling out, making a defender or two miss. But you also have to take in consideration even though Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator at this time, they played a quarterback with a similar hype, similar skill set, and Robert Griffin III. And when he ran that read option, they punished him. And Johnny Manziel is a lot smaller than Robert Griffin III. So it'll be interesting to see once they apply pressure, how does he stand up in the pocket? Can he take those hits? Will he scroll out? And will he do what Russell Wilson does, scramble to with his head up to make a play downfield with his arm, or does he get out of the pocket and try to get out of bounds or slide, or does he have too much go for the gusto and takes too many big hits?
Right. So I think he's going to perform well just because – The Browns defense is effective. I don't think Kyle Shanahan's going to ask him to be be overly dynamic. I think he's just going to make sure that, you know, put him in position to succeed. You know, obviously having Kyle Shanahan here in D.C., we miss him now. We blame him.
I bet you do.
We miss him now. I think he'll put the kid in a good position to succeed. He'll
rat face. That's what you called him, right?
No, his father's rat face.
Okay.
His father's a rat face. Now, I'm not going to go away from that.
I just want to rehash your memory.
All right. So with Kyle, he will hammer on the strengths of Johnny Manziel and hide his weaknesses. And I have faith that he'll do that. I believe he's done that with every quarterback he's had. Matt Schaub, RG3, and now you see this young guy and Hoyer for most of the season until, you know, Hoyer got exposed. Obviously the NFL defenses and NFL defensive coordinators are intelligent. So you can hide it for so long. Now he has new keys and he has a guy who he is hitting till the end of the season. Now we're approaching the end of the season, so it'll be late for them to figure it out. So maybe I see Johnny Football being successful. Will they win this game? That's another question. Cincinnati Bengals need this game big time. Obviously, the Browns need this game to stay in the playoff hunt. But I can see our Johnny Football throwing for about 200 yards, running for about 50 yards, and a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. Especially having Josh Gordon, a guy who no one can stop anywhere. I can see it happening.
I definitely see Cleveland winning for the simple fact that Joe Hayden owns A.J. Green.
He does.
On that outside.
He does.
And we all know that's where Andy Dalton wants to go with the ball, and he will stare him down, and he will force passes to him.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good job. Because you were close.
Yeah, I was. I looked at you. You was queuing it up. You was ready. So he'll force passes to A.J. Green, and that'll create opportunities for that Cleveland defense.
My man was about to say he was going to force some balls. That's hilarious. No, but they got Mohamed Sanu. He's had a good year. But I agree with you. Even though Sanu, the emergence of Sanu, Andy Dalton was still eyed down A.J. Green. I mean, he's A.J. Green. So that's what quarterbacks usually do. But Andy Dalton does it overly. He overly stares down A.J. Green. All right, let's go down. The New England Patriots beat the Chargers 23-14. It was, you know, Chargers had a 14-6 lead. Then the Patriots turned it on, and that defense looks stout. Is there any team right now in the AFC that can knock out the Patriots in the playoffs?
I still believe that the Denver Broncos, if given home field advantage, can take out this Patriots team. Just because, for the simple fact, that run game is much improved. And you're not going to put it all on Peyton Manning to win the game with you the way that C.J. Anderson is running. Then also you couple that with Ronnie Hillman returns, and then a healthy Julius Thomas. And that defense, that pass rush has gotten better. So I still am a firm believer in the Denver Broncos.
I don't think so. I don't think any team right now, and I don't like the Patriots, so you see where I'm coming with this. I don't think anybody – the only team I thought initially I thought it could beat the Patriots, but I don't think they're making the postseason is the Ravens, just because the Ravens are a physical team. And just they're not scared of the Patriots. The Patriots, I see the Patriots getting home field advantage. And just because having Revis and Browner, they bring a new dimension. Like the last couple of seasons, the Patriots – going against the Broncos, the cornerback play wasn't good enough to go against Peyton. The cornerback play wasn't good enough to beat a Peyton Manning. Right now, with Revis, to me, being the best cornerback in the NFL, Browner, who's like, though is not the best cornerback in the world, is very physical, and he does well under Belichick's system. They are a very, very intimidating team to go against defensively. This team rivals the defenses that Belichick had when he won the Super Bowl. This team is very – and just think about it. Even though they lost to the Packers, but to lose to the Packers in Lambeau Field and not get blown out, to be honest with you, to compete and have that game close shows you how strong this team really is.
I have three keys to counter that for Denver's offense. Ronnie Hillman, Wes Welker, Julius Thomas.
Not Hillman, because Hillman's not playing well. They got the kid from what's his name?
Yeah, no, I'm saying, but towards the AFC Championship game,
okay,
he'll be back.
Okay, but and I think the other kid from Cal looks better.
Yeah, CJ Anderson. Yeah, but Ronnie Hillman's far more dynamic if you get him in open space, running those choice routes, running screens.
I don't know.
I still believe in Denver.
I mean,
it's a discussion I'm sure we'll have in January.
Yeah, we will. Because, I mean, I want Peyton Manning to win a Super Bowl. I really do. I'm a fan of Peyton Manning. But just because of – all right, let's be real. Because of the lack of arm strength Peyton Manning does have, the way these wide receivers, the way these cornerbacks play, it's Seattle-ish, to be honest with you. It really is.
That's why it's important for them to get home field advantage. I said if Denver gets home field advantage, they win this. They win.
All right. Haloti Ngata is suspended 4 games for PEDs. Did this ruin the Ravens' playoff chances?
Absolutely it did. Because the way that back end of that defense has been playing, that secondary has been atrocious. Two, I like the fact that Haloti Ngata owned up to it. He said, I took him.
Yeah, I know.
He said, I took him. I got caught. And I'm going to do my suspension.
Yeah, I know. It was real.
It's real. I can respect a man like that who didn't say, oh, well, you know, it came in a supplement.
I didn't know.
I didn't check the list. And I took him. I'm going to take my lickings like a man.
Yeah, I like Haloti Ngata. He's what makes that defense goes. Well, him, Suggs, and Doomerville. But
you're forgetting that rookie, CJ Mosley.
CJ Mosley's a beast. But let's be real. Not having Ngata hurts because you don't have that guy. You know, you don't have Ngata's versatile. DN, nose tackle. You don't have that guy taking out bodies and for the linebackers to roam. But again, This it's going to hurt the team because once they see certain competition, I believe they're playing like Jacksonville next week. I mean, this Sunday. They may be playing Jacksonville, I think.
I'm not sure.
I think they're playing Jacksonville. Someone called in, anyone chastised me, said I'm wrong, whatever. If they're playing Jacksonville, that's a break. Then after that, I believe they have a tough game.
They have two division games.
It's not the Steelers. They played the Steelers twice already, right?
Nah, it's not the Steelers.
It's not the Bengals either because the Bengals beat them twice. So it had to be the Browns. It's the Browns?
It might be the Browns or someone else. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I know the Browns is one. I believe the Browns is one. It's a team. It's going to be difficult not having Ngata because, like Will said, the back end of that defense of the secondary has been atrocious, and not having one of your guys who creates havoc in the backfield against the run and pass, and a guy who, truth be told, honestly, cleans up plays as well. He's a guy who hustles all around the field for a DN nose tackle, a guy with that size to move like he moves. He's a big loss. It's a big loss for this team.
And then you add on top of that, your $100 million quarterback isn't playing at the $100 million level.
Yeah.
Kind of hurts your chances.
It really does. Anyway, let's go to another team that's in trouble. The 49ers lost to the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders.
Yeah,
I told you
last week when, you know, Trent Baalke's daughter made the comments about Greg Roman, and then the CEO, York, made that tweet during the game about I apologize to our fans. It was the beginning of the end for Jim Harbaugh. I think this only reaffirms it. Even though he has one more year left on his contract, there's been talks of him being traded
to the Raiders.
I mean, if I'm him, how can you trade me for one, because I still own the fact if I don't want to coach, I'll just quit. So he's totally had some leverage in where he decides to go. There's been rumors that he wants to stay in the Bay Area because his wife likes it there, and the Raiders do want a rock star coach. And let's be honest, everywhere that Jim Harbaugh's gone, he's won, and he's won quickly.
Yeah.
So maybe he can do a Gruden for this. What John Gruden did for the Raiders, he can do the same thing for the Raiders organization. Whip him into shape, quick, fast, in a hurry. But I do think if the 49ers brass lets Jim Harbaugh go, huge mistake.
Well, you know, Charles Woodson, who plays for Raiders, stated that he doesn't want Jim Harbaugh to coach the Raiders. He wants him to coach the University of Michigan. Charles Woodson, I agree with you. Jim Harbaugh, you should coach. If the San Francisco 49ers want to be some dumbasses, yeah, I said it, and let you go, a guy who's took this team to the NFC Championship game, two NFC Championship games, and a Super Bowl, and before you, they were some crap. Shame on them. That's all I'm going to say. Shame on them.
Yep.
Because you're acting real spoiled. Maybe you've forgotten that when you lost Steve Young and Joe Montana, obviously you had a couple good stints with Jeff Garcia, but you forgot how bad you were? Like, seriously?
They're forgetting the Jim Drunken Miller.
Yeah, exactly. Jim Drunken Miller. Exactly.
And Sean Hill.
Sean Hill.
You're forgetting that.
Yeah, all right. Like, seriously, you're forgetting. Like, all right, so you want Jim Harbaugh? Okay. These players who played with Mike Singletary, God bless Mike Singletary, great middle linebacker, but not a good coach. That team sucked. You are spoiled now to a point where now you want to run this dude out of San Francisco. Jim Harbaugh, if you want to leave, come back, come to Michigan. We love you. And if you want to be in the NFL, the Raiders, I guarantee you, with the way you do things, the Raiders will be a winning organization when you get there. And honestly, I'm trying to figure out what's the truth be told. What is the best situation for Jim Harbaugh? Like, obviously, we could talk about the Raiders because that's the rumor. That's the team that's we hear about showing vicious interest. But which team is the best situation for Jim Harbaugh?
The best that will have a coaching opening?
Either way.
If Tom Coughlin is forced out / retired, New York. I don't know if he wants to deal with the New York market.
I don't think he cares.
I really don't think he cares, but that would be the best situation for him. If Tom Coughlin either retires or is forced out, New York Giants would be the best thing for him.
What are you going to do the Jets job? I think what are you going to do the Jets job and remake Geno Smith?
We know that he likes projects. We know that he likes to build things from the ground up, doing it his way. So maybe the Jets would be an ideal situation. Jets, Raiders, maybe if they get rid of Trestman in Chicago, which I don't think they.
That's a good one. He played for Chicago. That is a good one.
I think they're more likely to get rid of Mel Tucker, the defensive coordinator, and keep Trestman there. Or possibly, you know, there's a new owner in Buffalo. So, you know, he may want his guy. And he may.
Buffalo's coach is doing a good job, though, for a young coach.
He is, but maybe he says, you know, I want to really reinvigorate this franchise with a leader. We don't have a leader of this franchise. We don't have a player who we can easily say is the leader of this franchise. How about we get a coach that we know has the big personality and a proven winner?
You mentioned before the break also Cam Newton, tragic back injury. His back injury due to a car accident. I believe he had two fractures in the back. How does this impact the Carolina's playoff push? Divisional championship push.
Well, they looked phenomenal this past Sunday against the Saints. They came out and they dominated the Saints. This definitely, because who are you going with now? Derek Anderson as your starting quarterback? Derek Anderson hasn't done anything since that one magical season he had in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So this really puts a damper on that team. You know, that defense hasn't played like it had previously last year, creating the turnovers, getting stops, and making touchdowns. So this definitely, in my opinion, makes it a two-man race for the NFC South with the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints.
Totally agree, and the Falcons look strong to me, even in defeat to the Green Bay Packers. They showed
shout out to Julio Jones. You've been showing out the past 2 weeks. You've been showing out for my fantasy football team.
I knew it was coming.
Much love. Let's keep it going in these championships. 2 weeks, baby. Then we take the gold.
All right, man. Jadeveon Clowney has been put on the IR due to his knee situation. Will he have an injury? Will his career be injury prone? Say like a Courtney Brown.
I'm not going to go that far, but I will make this.
Was a fast pass rusher too.
Yeah, there was one guy who prior to the draft said Jadeveon Clowney was a fraud and Khalil Mack is the truth, and that's Merrill Hodge. He was all over ESPN saying Jadeveon Clowney, he has great physical ability. He doesn't have those intangibles to become a dominant player. We've seen that he played when he wanted to at college, and that's not going to translate well to the NFL. That's going to cause him to get injured and cause inconsistencies in his plays. Merrill Hodge has been right so far. But it's only one season.
And only injuries, too, because I felt like he was on. Yeah, only injuries. Injuries, too. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, he said he didn't put in the, from his reports, sources he talked to, he didn't put in the work in the film room or in the weight room or after practice to want to be great. He was just going off his natural ability at South Carolina, and that got him real far. So he didn't think that work ethic, that lack of work ethic would help him in the NFL. He's been right so far. Khalil Mack looked like a beast this year for Oakland Raiders, which is hard to say that anyone looks like a beast the way that team has been playing. But Oakland does seem to have like a pretty bright future with David Carr and Khalil Mack.
Derek Carr
is your quarterback.
I like Khalil Derek Carr. I liked him in college.
Yeah, and Khalil Mack on that defense. Jadeveon Clowney, hopefully he takes this time to get stronger, gets in the film room and weight room with J.J. Watt, because you have kind of like the greatest asset is like the in his prime defensive player in J.J. Watt. Yes. Why you aren't trying to emulate him and, you know, be right up under his wing is baffling to me.
Well, it should be easy for you because he's the one seeing the double teams, whatever. So it should be, you should be like boosted to play with J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
Seriously. Everything's so easy. To me, like looking at Clowney, I still think I see all the tools. He can be great. We'll see how things are. I feel like he's freakish. I think he'll become stronger from this situation because the Texans are trying to ascend right now. They're trying to. They want to be a powerhouse team, and they're going to probably try to stack that defense even some more. So, in my opinion, I think that Clowney is either he's going to get with it or be left behind. And I don't think he wants to be left behind.
Yeah. Bill Bradley doesn't seem like coach that plays.
He don't play at all. And let's go to our picks. Last week, Will was 3-2, and I was 2-3 doing the whole anti-Jew campaign. If you listened to last week's show, I picked everything opposite of our guest, one of our guests on the show, we'll call him Jew. And he went 3-2. I went 2-3. Yeah. So it didn't work out for me. It worked out for him. But it's cool, though. I'm good with that, though.
Okay.
I'm good with that. All right, so my overall record is 27-25. Will is 24-19. Let's go with our picks for week 15. Sorry.
Week 14.
It's week 14, week 15?
Week 15, 15 excuse 15. Me. Yeah.
It's an error on my sheet. Week 15, Steelers versus Falcons.
Where's that game at?
Atlanta.
Pittsburgh's been really inconsistent.
I know, right? And they beat the Bengals in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I'm going with Falcons.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Falcons. I think the Falcons gained some confidence after what happened against the Packers. Let's go with the Bengals versus the Browns.
Going with Cleveland. Johnny Manziel gets his first win and starts his transformation to the NFL version of Johnny Football.
I don't see the Bengals losing two games in a row. I'm going to go with the Bengals on the road getting a W against the Browns. Broncos versus Chargers.
Give me the Broncos.
Chargers, the big game for the Chargers. Bigger, and it's also a big game for the Broncos. The Broncos want to keep in the same pace with the Patriots. Patriots and the Chargers need this game to keep their playoff hopes right alive. I believe right now they have the sixth seed or something like that. I'm going to go with the Chargers in this game. Niners versus Seahawks.
That thing is eroding quickly in San Francisco. Give me Seattle.
I'm going to believe my man Jim Harbaugh. This game is too big. They lose this game, they're officially out. Officially, really out. They win this game the season. The season's still alive, and Jim Harbaugh has shown me a track record of getting to the postseason. I'm going to go with the Niners in this game. Cowboys versus the Eagles.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Eagles. The Eagles dominated the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas. It's December. I don't care if they beat the Bears. That impresses nobody. It's December.
And the division's on the line.
We've seen this show.
We've seen this play out.
We've seen this show.
Give me Philadelphia.
Give me the Eagles. All right, fantasy football, week 15 fantasy pick. I'm going to let you go first.
Because
the playoffs, this is big time. You got to give people good advice, Will T.
I'm going to pick someone off my team.
All right.
Once again, you don't want a superstar, right? You want
you want somebody that no one, like.
Well, I'm not going to say obvious. I'm going to go with Julian Edelman. I think Julian Edelman kills against Miami.
Big Colts are playing. I believe the Colts are playing the Texans. Texans' run defense isn't the best in the world, I don't believe.
No.
Richardson, so I'm going to go with Trent Richardson this game. You know, I know he's splitting with Heron. I think Trent Richardson will get a couple of touchdowns in the goal line. So I'm going to go with Trent Richardson this game. And also, I'm going to get another sleeper. Drew Stanton is the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, when Carson Palmer was around, his main man was Larry Fitzgerald. Drew Stanton's main man is Michael Floyd. Michael Floyd should be a good pick. They're playing against the St. Louis Rams. Though St. Louis Rams have a good defense, but Michael Floyd will be able to get a couple big plays over the top of that secondary. So I'm going to go with Michael Floyd as well. So gave y'all two. I was being nice today. I'm using not this nice.
Yeah, that's a Christmas gift for
exactly.
you.
Exactly, Christmas gift. You know what I'm saying? I'm a stingy Nigerian. Anyways, time for commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking some NBA, and that's a tribute to my main man, Mega, and we call it Mega's NBA. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
Then I snatched the charts. First I had their ear, now I have their heart.
Song. That's one of my
rappers
favorite
came and went. I've been here from the start.
Never, never let you down, baby. John Wall, man. I ain't gonna lie, man. John Wall is one of the coolest dudes in the world to me right now, man. Did you see?
I did. I watched the whole game. I saw him break down afterwards. He played that game in the memory of his fallen friend, a little girl named Maya, if I'm not mistaken.
Maya Nelson. She had a middle name I couldn't say. I can't remember.
She succumbed to cancer.
Mm-hmm. A six-year-old.
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, during the post game, when Chris Miller was having an interview with John Wall, he just broke down emotionally. He said that, you know, he lost a dear friend, a young girl, 6 years old, who lost her fight with cancer, and he was just overcome with emotion. He said that game, that amazing game, double overtime game that he played, he played that in memory of her. And if he played that in memory of her, he definitely represented for her and her family, because he played an amazing game. Even though the Wizards were up by 21 at one point, Boston came back. And John Wall and them boys came back. They played ball, and he put that team on his back, man. And it just goes to show you, like I said last week, he's playing at the level. He's the best point guard in the East at this point time. And he should be an all-star starter. And if he isn't an all-star starter,
shame on you fans.
Shame on the fans.
To me, I'm not going to go into the play of John Wall, but this is what it represents. You know, a lot of times, you know, you hear people talk about African-American athletes, how they're spoiled, they act a certain way because, you know, they got money and this, that, and the other. But John Wall showed us one thing. He showed us that, you know, athletes are human beings, and they're guys who are compassionate, they're guys who care about people. And to see him break down that situation and see, obviously, what that young girl, the impact that young girl had in him, and I can only imagine the impact he had on that young girl as well, is a special thing. It's a beautiful thing. So for people out there who always think that – you know, these African-American athletes or they're a certain way or they're this, that, and the other. Look at people like John Wall and know that these people exist. There are many, many great, there were many, many positive athletes out there, out here in the United States, period. And I commend John Wall. I'm proud of the dude, and he is who what I respect in life, a genuine individual. And that's what I can gauge from it, from seeing something like that.
Nothing else more to be said, man. Yeah. I totally agree with you. In a day and age where athletes don't use the platform that they have and the voice that they have to stand for anything else except for their personal brand and money and their image, to see someone, you know, relatively young like John Wall go out there and say he played this game in memory of a little girl who's no longer with us is just a testament to his character and who he is as a man. Mm-hmm. And even for me, makes me even more of a fan of him than I was previously.
Seriously,
more of a fan of him as a man than a basketball player.
Go. Most importantly, that's what it's all about. And again, you know, we see a lot of things we can always think to ourselves and like, oh man, is that an act? Nah, that's something that was totally genuine. You could see it, period. And again, I'm like Will, I'm more of a fan of John Wall than I was 2 days ago, period. So big ups to John Wall. Again, I wish the best for him. I think he's one of the best, again, the best point guard in the East, and he's ascending himself to put in, to talk of being one of the best point guards. Well, of talk of being the best point guard in basketball, period. So John Wall, he's really doing it right now for the Washington Wizards, and the Wizards definitely had a fine. And it's amazing that, you know, even like, you know, last year folks were like, well, John Wall's not worth the max. I think you all need to shut up now and understand he's worth the max and some. The Brooklyn Nets are rumored to be putting Deron Williams, Brook Lopez, and Joe Johnson on a trading block. Do you agree with if the rumors are true, do you agree with this team pretty much trying to blow things up?
I do, because this team, they reach their max. They reach their peak, in my opinion. You know, KG is on his last leg. He should be retiring. Lopez, I think, is a guy that could be a guy you build your team around, but he doesn't have that personality, that want, that hunger, that desire to be the lead dog, to be dominant. Deron Williams, I've always thought he may be a nice person, but he's overpaid. A lot of people thought he was one of the best point guard in the NBA. I never believed that. And Joe Johnson, even though because I want to see everyone get paid all the money they can. But me personally, if I were a GM, if I were an owner, I wouldn't have paid Joe Johnson the last two contracts that he's been paid. Even though he's a phenomenal athlete, good basketball player, he just, for the type of money he's received, for that type of money, you should be leading your team to the playoffs year in, year out. And Joe Johnson hasn't been a guy that's been a leader of a franchise and taking them deep into a playoffs.
Yeah, to me, they should definitely keep Brook Lopez. Everybody else can go. Deron Williams has lost it. That's amazing that he used to be in the consideration of best point guard in the NBA, and all of a sudden now it's like, where has that gone? But everybody else can go. But Brook, you should build around Brook Lopez and get a couple draft picks around him as well, and maybe you can have a younger team and an up-and-coming team to a point where you can compete. Maybe down the road with the Cleveland Cavaliers and teams like that.
Well, you know what usually happens when there's a salary dump, right?
What happens?
That means the owner's trying to offload the team. And I don't know. Maybe I forgot his name.
I can't say the Russian. I
mean, yeah, the billionaire Russian. He decided I want to flip my investment. And, you know. He's what
Russian.
Was it?
He got cake. He rushing.
No, I mean, you think about it. The Clippers just went for $2 billion. You got a new arena in Brooklyn, in New York. What do you think they could go for? $3.5 billion?
Brooklyn? Oh, they go for a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, for a lot.
So.
Maybe.
You never know.
You may be. Again, our phone lines are open. The numbers 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Let's talk some Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs right now are a 7-game winning streak. What has changed for them to flip the switch around?
K Kyrie Irving has learned that LeBron has to have the ball and Kyrie needs to defer. The defense has improved dramatically. And also better and proper spacing, you know, with more of Kevin Love on the weak side, on certain sets, LeBron getting the ball in the middle of the floor where he can distribute and create for himself and for others. Those are the things that I've seen, and I haven't, you know, during the 7-game stretch that makes me, and them making the extra pass.
To me, Kyrie just like on a different level. Kyrie's still getting his points. This team is playing, is sharing the ball more. Deion Waiters is gradually getting to his role, knowing that he's like more of that Vinnie Johnson off the bench type player, guy they can, you know, they just want to score off the bench. I'm wondering, do I see this team as a contender right now? This team still at this point in time, I don't look at them as better than than the Chicago Bulls. Truth be told, I don't think that much better than the Washington Wizards right now. But I expect them to be better than the two teams I've mentioned after the Christmas break. I think this team will be real strong after the Christmas break. But this team still missing something. The defense can be a little stronger. They still have to commit to defense. Yes, it's cool to beat the Eastern Conference teams, but when you play, you're going to have to play this Western Conference team. You're going to have to engage with real competition. When you play the Golden State Warriors, you play the San Antonio Spurs, the OKC now that KD and Westbrook are back. When you play against those teams, that's when I will see, in my opinion, if this team is really ready to contend and win a championship.
Nothing else to add.
All right, cool. Let's go to Golden State. I mentioned Golden State. The Golden State Warriors right now, I believe, have the best record. They have the best record in the
NBA. Best record in the NBA. All right. They have two losses. I think they're like 19-2.
They lost last night to the Clippers. I think they lost with Blake Griffin, a fluke shot, I think.
Okay.
They must have lost three games, I think. Don't quote me. I'll check it later. Are the Warriors real contenders? Or are they just regular season? Are they just a regular season show? Excuse me.
I think a little bit of both. Steve Kerr is a new coach. You know, even though they don't have a lot of film on what he's going to do in certain situations. But I do think that part of that could be a test to their success early on, right?
Yeah.
Two, they do have the best backcourt in the game, hands down. One of the best shooters at the point guard and creators off the dribble, Stephen Curry.
He's
so nasty. The defense, they're playing better defense. But, you know, I'm not sure if this team is built for playoff basketball. Do they have that guy they can go to in the post and get it? We know that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson can get their own shot, but do they have that guy in the paint they can put the ball into? And
I like Andrew Bogut. I think it's good for them.
I think Bogut's a good defensive center.
When
David Lee comes back.
Yeah, David Lee will be back. That'll be fine. And you're right. I'm sorry. They only lost two games. They didn't lose yesterday. That was somebody else.
Okay.
This team, to me, I think this team is a championship contender. They offensively, they're good. Defensively, truth be told, they're good. They're fine defensively, to be honest with you. Obviously, you see a team like that, you see them score a lot of points. You look at them like, okay, wow, this team just scores. But they play defense. Klay Thompson is a really good defender. You got Andre Iguodala off the bench, who's a good defender. Harrison Barnes is a potentially a good defender. He's a physical guy. Bogut is a good big who defends his position in the block. You'll have Lee. I think Lee's like, he's a so-so defender, but he's not back yet. And he's a good rebounder. So this team has strengths all around. The weakest defender is probably Steph Curry, but Steph Curry's even improving. So this team, to me, is a dangerous team. And also, anytime you can make baskets as easy as they can, you know, obviously you think of the playoffs. You know, in the playoffs, you're like, oh wow, defense is figure out. But when you're a pure shooting team like they are, it's a little different. You know right. what I mean? You always hear Barkley talk about, well, you know, in the playoffs, those J's won't fall. But that's different. You know what I mean? Like, Steph Curry handles the ball and get by you, but his J is real. Mm-hmm. You know, we never said that about Reggie Miller, like them J's weren't going to fall.
No, we didn't.
Reggie Miller's J's fell in the playoffs. They fell often. Yep. You know, but it wasn't him. You have a two-headed monster when it comes to shooting, though. I don't think you've ever seen a backcourt this thorough when it comes to the jump shot. Like, this thorough.
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
So I feel like this team, in my opinion, is a contender. It's a dangerous team. I posed a question on our Facebook page about, you know, are the Warriors a contender or are they a regular season show? Man, Jay said, they will be after they get to a conference final and feel that burn of defeat. They're 1 or 2 years away. Yeah, obviously we always look at the progression. You get to you get to the conference finals, you lose, then that makes you a stronger team. So I agree with that, Jay. That could definitely be could play a part.
No.
You got anything you want to add?
No, none at all.
I have one more to read off of. If I could find it on time. I hate dead air, though. You know what I mean? I want to read before I get there. Here you go. It's a 1 or 2. Yeah, 1. My man. So on our, on a Facebook NBA open court, like, NBA TV. Open court. Yeah. My man Norman Busby said regular season show. I don't know. I don't think they're a regular season show. Again, I think this team is strong. That jump shooting capability makes this team a very, very dangerous and potent team. But, again, I would love to see this team in the playoffs. Stephen Curry to me is a clutch player. So, if they're strong, I believe he'll have a good showing in the playoffs. But, anyway, it's about time to go hard in the paint. So, I'm about to cue that music.
I go hard in the paint. Leave you stankin'. What the thinkin'?
All right. So, I'm going to start it off. So, I'm going to choose somebody down low. He's now starting for the Boston Celtics. He wasn't starting before, but he's now starting. I was a fan of him in North Carolina. I'm going to go with Tyler Zeller. I like Tyler Zeller, him and the Rondo connection. He's a big who can finish around the basket with both hands, right and left hand hook shots. He's a traditional big, and he's a big who can run the floor as well. So I'm going to go with Tyler Zeller to go hard in the paint for this upcoming week.
I'm going to go with Al Horford for this upcoming week. That team is, surprisingly playing strong once again. The head coach Mike, Brazado, has that team playing really well, looking like the San Antonio of the East. I think Al Horford, who was out for last year, he's starting to really develop and round out, starting to get into game shape, and his numbers are going to show it this week.
All right, so what you got? Oh, man, Al Horford go hard in the paint. That's good, man. That's good work right there, Wilty. That's good work.
I appreciate it.
All right, man. So before we sign out, make sure you listen to our show on our official Urban Sports Scene website. You'll probably hear us listen to this 201 show tomorrow morning. If you didn't hear it tonight, I'll have it on our website. The site is www.waleo.podbean.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbean is spelled podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
Once again, it's been real. We appreciate you for listening to us, taking the 2 hours or however many minutes you've taken out of your time just to listen to us. Once again, we're fans just like you. We have a platform. We want to give fans the opportunity to discuss sports just like us. And we appreciate your time and your energy and your love. Peace.
Peace. And Mega, my man Mega, sign us the fudge out, please. I want to say it again, Mega. I hear one. Peace.